Penguin Random House Audio presents Address of Violet Taffeta by Tessa Arlen. Read for you by Hannah Curtis. For my sister, Debbie. Chapter 1. March, 1893. Lucy. The cup shook in Lucy's hand, slopping tea over the tablecloth. Damn. She blotted the spreading stain with her napkin, trying not to catch her mother's critical eye. Mrs. Kennedy wrinkled her nose in fastidious disdain.
Not like you to be clumsy, dear, her mother said. Are you feeling quite well?
She was spared an explanation.
Oh, for heaven's sake! Will you look at the toast? Quite burned. And they have forgotten the marmalade.
Lucy's mother rang the bell at her elbow.
Where is Palmer? What on earth is going on in this house?
She jangled the bell again, her eyebrows raised at the careless attention to their breakfast. Lucy leaned her hot forehead into the palm of her hand.
Please, she begged. Whichever god was responsible for deep, dreamless sleep. Just one night. Is that too much to ask? Really, my dear, you must speak to them. They get worse every day.
Her mother shook her head at the misery of poorly trained servants and opened her embroidered reticule. Lucy watched the sal volatile make its first appearance of the day and stifled irritation. If only all life's real catastrophes could be righted with a sniff from a cut glass bottle with a silk tassel, she thought, as she hung on to a silence. The signs were clear. Her mother was having one of her bad days.
I waited half an hour for my early morning tray, and it was brought up to me by an untidy-looking girl who I don't believe I have seen in the house before today. It's rather frightening, Lucy, to wake up to find a complete stranger in one's bedroom, even if they are offering you tea.
She took a delicate sip from her cup and put it down again, her lips pursed in a mooey of distaste.
It's cold, and the milk has turned.
Her voice sank to a martyr's whisper.
It's quite undrinkable.
Lucy looked down at clotty clouds floating on the surface of dishwater grey tea. She took a mouthful and swallowed in defiance.
Yes, Mama, the milk's off.
Her mother's exasperation at Lucy's inability to supervise her servants drifted across tired table linen, mismatched china, and the offending toast.
They won't exert themselves if you don't take the time to correct them, Lucy, will they?
Her tight smile of grievance struggled against outright disapproval at her daughter's handling of her domestic staff. All Lucy wanted to do was grope her way back up the stairs to her room, lay her aching head down on her cool, smooth pillow, and drop into sleep. But it was time to brief her mother on the uncertain future of her household. The house of hell, as James had called it, the last time he had slammed the front door on his way to his club. She straightened her back and met her mother's gaze.
You are absolutely right, Mama. But I'm afraid that the servants won't exert themselves at all, because they have gone, all of them. I gave them notice 2 weeks ago.
She tried to make her voice light, as if dismissing a houseful of servants was an everyday occurrence to be remedied by the Slade Domestic Agency.
Yesterday was their last day, which is why.
Her voice faltered as she saw the faces of women who had been her servants and companions for the past 9 years when they had said goodbye. As they had held her hands or enfolded her in their arms and wished her all the best in the world. At least they found new, grateful, and hopefully stable employers. Well, nearly all of them. Her mother's hand flew to the single strand of pearls around her neck and held on to it for dear life.
You let them go? My dear child, then who was that person in my room.
That was the scullery maid. I agreed to keep her on for another week or so. She is very willing.
Dismissing her maid, Clotilde, the housekeeper, Mrs. Jackson, cook, the parlour maid, Palmer, Esme's admirable but intimidating nanny, Mrs. Cameron, and the odd job man who came on Fridays, had a strange effect on Lucy, and its outcome lay upstairs in her chest of drawers, wrapped in tissue paper. It was a complete waste of energy to try to put an optimistic gloss on what she must say next.
You see, Mama, James. It seems that James has left me.
Her mother held her breath, her eyes closed for a brief flutter of a second.
Oh, Lucy, not again.
She might as well say, which James, Lucy thought, as she watched her mother struggle for composure. She never had time for him in the first place. No wonder she didn't notice when he left a month ago. As she waited for her mother's, whatever are you going to do, dear? The skin on her arms seethed in a sting of unease, so close to fear that she was amazed she could string two words together. Without a husband or the necessary means, deserted wives simply did not survive, and if they did, it was not in a way that polite people recognized. We are equipped for marriage and bearing children, but not for desertion. It was not a new realization. Lucy had known the moment James had stormed off into a rainy February night with a badly packed valise that she might very well be destitute within 6 months. Three if her plan did not work. Her mouth was as dry as toast. She took another mouthful of sour tea. I'd give anything in the world right now for a whiff from that blasted bottle. She felt the familiar stirring of resentment and welcomed it as an alternative to dread. Why didn't she have a comfortable mother, a kindly woman with a soft bosom on which she could lay her tired head and cry out her crushing fears and the deep aching despair of being abandoned? Mrs. Kennedy did not encourage outward displays of emotion. Swollen eyes and red noses were vulgar. Even if the love of one's life had been carried off in 3 days, as in Lucy's father's case, by typhoid.
I can't imagine he will be gone for long, dear. James tends to be unpredictable. I expect he'll be back when...
A dismissive wave of her elegant hand. From the moment Lucy's mother had met James, she had considered him irresponsible, lacking in all reliable masculine virtues. The money runs out. Lucy knew how her mother's mind worked. Is that the best you can do? Irritation rescued her from self-pity.
I'm afraid that this time it is for good. Even if he wanted to come back, I would say no. So it seems I have no husband.
Lucy heard defiance in her voice. Her mother, no doubt, heard her remark as brazen.
I have no husband.
A month ago, the dreaded words had left her trembling. Saying them aloud, she felt her fear begin to subside. A surge of something akin to excitement prickled in her throat with the exhilarating effervescence of champagne. Stop it, she told herself. Not enough sleep has made you light-headed. But the feeling of giddy elation persisted. Even if she couldn't pay the bills and they were turfed out of the house, she was free of James. His erratic and badly timed disappearances, cold sarcasm, and 2-day hangovers. He ran off with a pantomime dancer. She pressed the tips of her fingers to her lips to stop herself from laughing. I sound like a heroine in one of my sister's stories. She gulped another mouthful of sour tea.
Her name is Gilda. Gilda LaVie. I believe she pronounces it LaVie.
Laughter rippled upward, met cold tea coming down, and rushed it back the way it had come. She pressed her napkin over her mouth to prevent more damage to the cloth. Her mother looked away.
I am not surprised that you are overwrought, dear. I always said that James... She lifted a hand, palm out.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?